I'm Jan Suk Fong Lee.
And I'm Dina Del Bucchia.
And this is Can't Live. Do,
Can't Live. We're talking about books and stuff.
Hello and welcome to Can't Live. It's summertime. It's podcast time. It's always podcast time, no matter the season. That's what's great about a podcast. It's not a seasonal
thing. It's like an all-season camel-colored lightweight coat.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure. It doesn't need to be waterproof. It's okay at any time of the year. We're all surviving mostly.
Mostly. The climate change smoke apocalypse is upon us. I'm extremely grumpy. I just want everyone to know this.
I'm also extremely grumpy, but those things are not the driving factors.
Okay, what are your driving factors if not the smoky apocalypse?
Just like personal shit. Like I'm taking everything real personally, but those things are like beyond my control, so I'm not even that mad about them.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm extremely mad about them,
but it's, I mean, we'll get to it maybe during my rage minute. Maybe I'll talk about it, you know? You never know.
Yeah, in the rage minute.
But we're very excited to have a super excellent guest. Have we ever let you down with our guests? I mean, honestly, probably, but don't tell me about it. Oh, I've almost revealed so much about my own weird personal vibes again. Anyway, that is not the case today. We have this amazing writer, editor, instructor, Shashi Bhatt. Her novel, The Most Precious Substance on Earth, is out now. And if I may speak for both Jen and myself, we loved it. And we think you should go get it.
Yeah. Everybody go buy this book.
Everybody go buy this book. But welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me on. I'm a big fan of the podcast.
We love to hear it. That's the best way to put us in a good mood.
Yeah. I can feel my grumpiness lifting already.
We should ask. Shashi, what's happening? Yeah. We always ask our guests, what's happening with you right now?
Well, I guess the biggest thing is just that my book is coming out in like 10 days. It's weird because it's my second book, but it kind of feels like a first book because my actual first book came out so long ago.
it's actually really honorable to have lots of time between books, in my opinion. I was asking earlier, like, how does it feel right now? Because now we've had like over a year of people releasing books during COVID, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you feel now that you've watched other people release books in COVID? I realize I'm asking questions and I haven't asked Dina what's happening, but we'll get to you, Dina.
I'm fine.
Yeah, it feels a little strange. Like, I mean, if we weren't in a pandemic, I feel like I would have done something in person. I have attended more literary events in the past year and a half than I have in my whole life combined. So that's kind of cool. And I feel like I've also attended some great book launches. So yeah, it's not all bad.
No, it's not all bad. The accessibility factor is pretty awesome, which is the one thing that I was saying to someone the other day, is that the accessibility is good. Cause like I have a kid, it's hard for me to get out to stuff. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, the online stuff is good for that. Hey, Dina, what is happening with you? I'll ask you.
What's happening? Well, yesterday, I went to go see the Corpse Flower at Bloedel Conservatory. Everyone knows I love plants. So this is just a different plant. But it hadn't bloomed yet. It wasn't open and stinky yet. But it was still very impressive and cool.
Is it huge?
It's quite tall. It's like 6 feet tall.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really big. There are little dioramas around the conservatory that kind of show you what it looks like at different stages. So there is a life-size kind of sculpture of what it looks like when it's open, which is very cool. But I honestly think I am going to go back and try and see it again. And I saw like obviously tons of cool birds, beautiful tropical birds, cockatoos and macaws and parrots and just beautiful things. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I go to the beach, I go into the water, I go to the pool, I hang out. I got to see my parents recently and hang out with them in a very more real, normal way, which was very fun. And my Daniel, former host of the podcast, also was visiting, so I got to see him as well. So yeah, seeing people, socializing, that's very enjoyable.
Well, it was also recently both our birthdays.
That's true.
Because it's Leo season.
It's weird. Deep in Leo season with these two Leos, for sure.
Oh, nice. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. did you wait? When does the corpse flower bloom, though? When do you have to go back?
The thing is, you don't really know. So it kind of starts to shed. Like, it has a sheath, and then it sheds the sheath, but there's multiple layers. So it's kind of a gamble. So
do they have does it have an Instagram feed or something
does.
Where the Bloedel Conservatory,
there's a YouTube live stream. So anyone who is not going there can just watch what's happening.
I love it. That's very nice.
It is pretty cool.
What a star.
Yeah. You know me. I love a stinky plant. Jen, what's happening with you?
It was my birthday, although we didn't do much, which was fine. Although, you know, everybody this year gave me bottles of bourbon as gifts, which is fantastic. I also got a huge bag of hickory sticks from my child's father. I think I refer to him on the podcast as the baby daddy. But he brought me a giant bag of hickory sticks, which really nice. He remembered that I like hickory sticks. I've acquired two books in the past month, which is a fast clip. I can't talk about one of them because not everything is completely signed yet, but I can talk about one that got signed and announced. And it's a novel called Sunsetter by former guest and friend of the podcast, Curtis LeBlanc.
Yay. We love to see it.
We love Curtis. And I just want to say, like, honestly, it's a really wonderful novel, and it's about the opioid crisis and unemployment in a small prairie town where there is a rodeo called the Sunsetter. And there's mysterious deaths, and there is a hero that emerges who is not the one you expect, but is pretty great nonetheless. And there's a bunch of shady carnies, because who doesn't love a story with shady carnies? I say this as a former carny myself.
Yeah, you're a former carnival worker.
Exactly. So that was really exciting. That's been the best part of this month, actually, is just that really exciting stuff, being able to read manuscripts and thinking about what we can do with them. And that's been really fun. And I also wrote the ending for my own novel. So now we just go back and fix some stuff up. I say it like it's easy. It's not.
Oh, my God.
I might have killed off my favorite character, but that's all I'm going to say.
You know what? Sometimes that's what has to happen.
Let's ask Shashi a question.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
You
We're going to talk about a novel right now, so let's get into it.
Let's talk about the most precious substance on Earth, and which is, for the listeners for our friends of the podcast who want to know, it's a story of our protagonist named Nina, who goes through some pretty tough stuff near the beginning of the novel and the way she deals with it sort of throughout her life. And I got to say, there's a lot here. There's a lot of comedy and tragedy, a lot of comedy, but I really, the most burning question for me is all the pop culture references in the book, which is obviously, I felt like you were writing that for me and Dina. Shasha's writing this for us. And there was so much that just made me laugh because they were they change, they evolve throughout the novel. Nina starts out with stuff from the 90s and then continues on until present day. And one of the things I noticed which I thought was such a smart thing to do with when she's teaching her high school students and she says she hasn't updated her pop culture references for the class. And she said, they don't watch Pretty Little Liars anymore. And I'm like, such a specific time period. And then you know exactly what. So anyway, before I go on and on about that, how much do you actually follow pop culture? Or did you just put it in the book just because?
Oh, that's a good question. I definitely watch a lot of television. I feel like most of the references in the book are TV references. Although Nina watches shows that even I don't watch. Like, there's some references. There's one to Sharky and George, which I think I saw one episode of once and just love the theme song. So I just had her watch that. And then there's another one. Oh, The Bachelor. Like, she's watched all of The Bachelor. I stopped watching The Bachelor several years ago when it reached a point of misogyny that I just couldn't tolerate. But I definitely am. Like, I do love pop culture. And that was one of the hardest things to manage when I was putting the book together, too. Like, making sure I didn't have all kinds of anachronisms in it once I put the stories or chapters in order.
Yeah, so did you have to, like, go through it and, like, you know, double-check the timelines on or the references for those? Because, I mean, the book spans 15 years, maybe?
A couple of decades. And I did end up making, like, a timeline spreadsheet because it had started out as short stories and then, like, some of them moved in time once I made it into a novel. So I made a spreadsheet and tracked every single reference or like time marker of any kind. And then like fact checked all of them and sent it back and forth with my editor and copy editor. And so there was a lot of that and a lot of deciding like when an anachronism was worth keeping or like whether I needed to replace it.
Mm-hmm. I love to hear this organizational stuff. I love to hear it. I actually hate spreadsheets. So I had a couple books where I did stuff like that, but I just made lists in a grungy little notebook. I didn't do a spreadsheet.
All of that is super useful to know as I also keep trying to write this novel. And I find people's organizational techniques very fascinating. Also, I'm of course glad Jen asked that question because of one of my questions was also about the pop culture references, which I just think were so crucial to the book. Like they're such an important part of storytelling in this type of book. And this is in a lot of ways a coming of age story. And for me, the way her story was told felt very fresh. Each movement thanks for writing it. Each movement in her life had such immediacy and like, I felt very present and there's a very specific tone to the book. So when you were crafting it, this is sort of like more of an overall question, but how did you kind of come at her story?
I guess like the whole thing started out with Nina's voice. Like I wrote the first chapter of this as a short story back in 2007. And like I wrote it just because I had to give up reading at a bar off campus during my MFA. And like the stories I was writing for class were very sort of serious and slow and descriptive. And I didn't think it would go over well with that crowd. So then I just wrote something that had a lot of jokes and pop culture references and something that had a bit of a like a shocking ending. Or I'm using the word shocking, but I guess what I wanted it to be was uncomfortably real. So that's where the story started. Now that is not a story that I would read aloud to a crowd of people, I think. That was my entry point into the story, and it kind of evolved from there. Like, the more I wrote, the more I realized what I wanted to really write about was women feeling silenced or, like, situations where a woman wanted to speak or felt like she should speak but just couldn't or like couldn't make herself do it. And that was the feeling I tried to carry out throughout the book.
Well, I think you did do that because like later on in the book Nina joins Toastmasters, which by the way is hilarious to me. That scene with all the Daves was one of the funniest things.
Thank you.
I'm like, there's original Dave, there's the other Dave, and it was amusing. It was so funny. But like that's it, right? She's constantly trying to find ways to be authentic and to actually communicate her authentic self. And I don't know. And maybe this is like a question that you can't answer, but I was wondering when I finished the book, did you ever have an idea of what happens to Nina after the book ends?
Oh yeah. You know, I do. I have thought about that. Because I think it ends in a pretty bleak place. But like what, I don't think she's hopeless. And what I would want for her is to find a good group of close friends, because I think she spends so much of her time alone, even when she's with other people, or like she'll only have one friendship at a time. And often they're just really fraught friendships. I think there's like a bit of a note of hopefulness towards the end when she makes a close friend through Toastmasters. But yeah, it doesn't end in the happiest place.
I really like that.
I was really hoping.
Oh, go ahead, Jen.
Go ahead.
No,
Dina.
I want you to say.
No, go ahead.
No,
Dina.
Jen only.
Oh, I was really hoping that friendship she made at Toastmasters, which seemed like the least fraught friendship she has in the novel,
totally.
Right? So I'm like, oh, they're going to go off together like Laverne and Shirley. That's what I want for them.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I loved them. Well, it's interesting too, because the novel is really kind of bookended by friendships in a way. Like It starts with the very intense adolescent friendships that are like your lifeline when you're that age. So then, going through that loneliness and then coming out at the end. Yeah. You know, in this, again, I don't think it's bleak either. I think it almost feels like a reset. Like there's possibilities there, you know, in the ending. It's not, I don't know. Maybe it's just my midlife crisis talking that wants that to be true.
No, I think there are possibilities, though, because, like, you know, when her laptop, Nina's laptop gets stolen and she's able to track the teenage girl who's taken it. And I felt that there was some sort of rebirthing process in watching this other teenage girl do her teenage girl shit. You know what I mean? And then she gets the laptop back. So it's like an opportunity for her to, like, as you say, Dina, have a reset. That's what I feel about it. I don't think it's that bleak, Shashi.
No, good. Yeah. And maybe she has a potential career in like internet security or something.
You know what? It's not out of the realm of possibility by any stretch of the imagination. The other thing, because you talked about her voice and that being really a starting point. And we're with her so much. And her voice is so honest and real. And I just kept thinking, do I know this person? Did I grow up with this person? Like over and over again, I'd be like, oh yeah, this is very relatable. Like, I think there's a large, like Jen said earlier, in reference to the pop culture, but I think there are going to be so many people sort of our age group, our generation, that will feel very close to Nina as a character. So I don't know if, like, you know, some of your life, you know, jumped into that, or just things that you were able to witness as you have also aged since that time, and just like pull that in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like the plot of it is not based on my personal experience, and neither are the characters. I mean, Nina definitely has my sense of humor, because I don't know who else she could have. But like, there are things, like, I was definitely a band geek in high school, as Nina is briefly. She plays the oboe and I played the flute. I did live in Halifax, but as an adult, like, I didn't grow up there in the 90s. So sometimes I'll take like settings, or I'll take like a character trait and kind of like blow it up into a story, or to make the stakes higher and build a character out of it. But it's not based on my personal experience, I wouldn't say. I've never been to a Toastmasters meeting, for example.
My oldest friend, who I've known since grade 2, is a member of Toastmasters, actually.
Oh, nice.
Sorry. And so whenever I was reading it, all I kept hearing was her telling me about Toastmasters. And I think you did a pretty accurate description of what goes on in a Toastmasters meeting.
Oh yeah, my mom was in it briefly, I think through work, and so that's how I knew about like table topics. And I feel like I would really benefit from Toastmasters, but I don't know if I'm willing to commit to it.
Reading the book really made me think that I could run my own Toastmasters. I was like, I could be doing this, but I would not be a dick like some of these people. Like,
I kept getting, instead of original Dave, it'd be original Dina.
OD. When I was in high school, I remember people that I was in high school with being in Toastmasters, and I was like, this is wild. Because I grew up in a small town, and so I think people were like, no, you got to do these like achievement level things to get yourself out of this town. And one of those achievement level things was being a part of Toastmasters. And I was like, okay, this is very weird. Most of our parents work at an industrial plant. Cool. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I did take like a public speaking, or it was like I was in an Indian youth group, and we were like forced into taking public speaking classes when I was a teenager. I feel like I was the only one who took it seriously.
But look at you now. Look at you now.
Exactly.
I want to step back into a little bit talking about the humor in the book, because Jen brought it up right away. And again, the book deals with some really dark stuff, and it's there's some real heavy parts. But yeah, as a character, Nina again has this tone, this voice, and there's comedy in so many scenes of just the way she gets to view what's happening, or her commentary on what's happening. So if you could just talk a little bit too about your experience like writing comedically as someone who teaches that and who is very fascinated in talking about literary writing that's funny. I want to know more.
Yeah, I'm really curious what it's like teaching that, actually, because so much of
it's really weird
to me. Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, it's just like a lot of Nina's humor is just observing the things around them from an ironic distance and then kind of commenting on them. And I find it a lot easier to incorporate jokes in first person. Like, I think maybe my sense of humor is voice driven. Like in third person, I find my stories just automatically become more serious. I'm not totally sure why. And I think like writing this book was a lot of it was trying to find a balance between like lightness and darkness, and like to use those jokes to like lure the reader in, but then kind of turn things, like turn it on its head and then surprise them with reality.
And there's reality in the humor as well. Like, and I think that's also why it works so well. I also would say that is one thing we're talking about when I talk about teaching is I do definitely talk about first person being much more amenable to a comedic tone or comedic voice for a character. So I think I think it's 100% true.
Do you teach like how to write a joke?
I do.
What if someone comes in and they have, wow.
Yeah. Like I literally start at the beginning of being like, this is what comedy is. Comedy is an art form. And then I kind of take it from explaining that things are funny, but they might not be comedy. And then I take it from there and like break down what a joke is. I talk about other techniques that you can use, including how to incorporate, you know, joke writing into writing of any kind. Like you can put a joke once you know how to write one into anything. So, but yeah. And then I kind of cover different genres and how that can be comedic. Yeah. I just redeveloped my course and like finished I guess I'm going to call it a draft because people are going to look at it and then tell me if it's good or bad and I have to make changes or whatever. Like 2 days ago. So I truly just spent most of the summer doing that. And it was so much work redeveloping this thing, but I think hopefully very worthwhile. Sure. But it was interesting to look at how I was teaching and how, you know, if I thought it was successful or unsuccessful and and trying to think of like what I do myself that I actually can teach. I guess that's the hard part about teaching mm-hmm. too. Like, and I'm sure both of you could speak to this, but the thing of like what is instinctual to you and then how you can impart some type of knowledge that is useful to people outside of your yeah. own weird brain that has its own processing techniques. And I think a lot of it is too, just getting students to trust that they have instincts that are starting to, maybe they were dormant and now they're just like becoming activated through practice or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's hard to turn like what feels just automatic into a craft lesson. I think what helped me a lot with the humor was reading aloud. Like, I don't think I ever tried to be funny until I started doing public readings, because then you have to think so much more about audience reaction and about timing and about not like being boring. Yeah,
I think your book too.
Go ahead, Jen. When I was reading it, it occurred to me that Nina is often quite depressed. Like she's often mm-hmm. in a really long, actually, depression. And my question was that, like, depression isn't funny inherently. I'm laughing like it's funny. Ha ha, Jen. Like, it's not like inherently funny, but also the way you write sort of the manifestations of her depression are really funny. So I guess what I wanted to know is how in your head, how does making her depression seem funny? Like, how does that even work for you, that process? Because I am a very not funny writer, so it would never occur to me to do that.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it was, like, I mean, I agree she's deeply depressed through most of the book, but to read that, like, just a straightforward description of depression or like the trauma she experiences, I think it would be a lot. And I think the book needed that balance. I think like I was trying not to joke about the things she was going through, but just have her joke while she was going through them. And I guess it's kind of similar to the way she talks about pop culture or watching television. Like, it's all just kind of coping mechanisms for her or ways to like suppress what she's actually feeling, and like distance herself from her real feelings.
Well, I think that's like really key. 'Cause when I think about, her friend, Amy, who's one of the other like big characters in the in the novel, at no point does Nina ever make light of what Amy's problems are. Mm-hmm. She makes fun of Amy in other ways. Like, there's always other ways. But like at no point does she ever seem to make fun of obviously some, you know, deep pain and stuff that Amy is going through. And I actually really thought that balance was so smart. And especially near the end when we find out what happens to Amy, I felt like that real sort of grief or sadness that Nina is feeling for her friend is not, I mean, there are no jokes there. And I think it was really mm-hmm. smart for you to do that, to give her both of those things, to give her moments of like genuine sadness and also moments of like pure comedy.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Also, when she was having, she was on a dating app, right? And she had a profile pic with the shark, but I was like, oh my God. Why did I not think of that when I was on the dating apps?
That was definitely based on personal experience. I did have a Photoshopped shark photo in my dating profile.
That's the best. Yes! That's absolutely the best.
And a lot of people thought it was real, and it was like the Halifax Harbor, so it was like, no.
See, that's how you make dating apps fun for yourself.
Oh, that is so funny.
Oh, God.
So you could just start giving people ideas for their dating app photos.
Oh, yeah. My friend and I have a business idea where we're going to be dating profile gurus. So maybe I'll
I honestly think that. It's so good and smart, and I love it. And it's obviously very funny.
I mean, it's clearly a good joke. Just Photoshop an inappropriate animal into your profile pic.
Or a person. Like, just put yourself there with Ashton Kutcher.
Oh, so funny. I don't really know how to do Photoshop very well or anything, but I got an app for my phone that's really easy to use. And I I have these, of course I do, tiny flocked animal otters. Like, you know, those calico critters or Sylvanian families toys. And I will take a picture of myself and then cut it out and then put it in so it looks like I'm part of their family. Anyway, I'm very normal. I'm very normal and everything I do is super normal. The book is so tight. This is the kind of book that is written by someone who both is a great writer with, as we already have described, all the amazing skills that you have with character and voice and tone and the comedic stuff you're doing. But like, it felt to me like the kind of book that was written by someone who has edited and is like, this is how you get shit done.
Oh, wow.
This is how you're getting to the point. Like even in a book that I love, there was always a moment where I'm like, oh, I'm going to put this down. Or I don't feel engaged in this moment. And it usually is probably just me. Like, I want ice cream or something ridiculous and I need to step away. But the chapters were the perfect length. Every moment I was just like, oh, I just felt so inside of the book. So give away all your secrets. No, I guess I just wanted to praise you. I don't know. But yeah, I felt so engaged.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I think part of like what was helpful to me was like, I just love the short story and like thinking about each chapter as a short story and trying to make them feel compressed. Like I really love how a short story compresses and highlights the narrative arc. So I was always just kind of focused on that. But I should also give a lot of credit to my editor, Anita Chong, who is amazing. She is really good at pointing out when like I'm getting long-winded or like, well, for example, there's a chapter or like a section of the book where Nina smokes a lot of weed. and I think in my first draft, I really overemphasized it. Like there was so much description of like paraphernalia and her, like all this stuff. And Anita was just like, I don't know. I think like less is more.
You know what though? When this does get adapted into a film, someone could make a beautiful montage of all that.
Oh,
so like that would, because yeah.
Just Nina smoking different types of weed.
Just very artfully crafted, beautiful cuts, different. Yeah. There's bongs, there's joints, there's whatever, you know, like pipes, and then a great soundtrack. I don't know what the soundtrack would be, but I can.
Like a lighter Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, like.
I was going to say it's going to be Insane in the Brain by Sly Cypress. So.
Oh, okay. I'm fine with that.
No, I think that's too literal. I'm sorry. The Cypress Hill idea is a bad idea. That's too literal.
It's like the one time I saw Cypress Hill at Lollapalooza 95, and they're like, we're not subtle at all. And they wheeled out a huge pot leaf on stage when they came out. They're like, we love Vancouver. And then people were throwing bags onto the, anyway.
I was there.
Yeah, you were there. And then, of course, and then I was like there. 2 hours later, Courtney Love gave me a high five. What a day.
What? Oh,
whoa.
Did you ever wash that hat?
I eventually had to. That was also the day that I was, trigger warning, sexually assaulted in the mosh pit. Anyway, huge day for me. You know what, though? People saved me. I was like, I got to get out of here. And then they pushed me up, and then I crowd surfed to safety.
Yeah. Did you watch Woodstock 99?
No, I haven't seen it yet. Yes. I'm honestly a little bit scared to watch it.
It might be a lot, yeah.
I was so enraged. I could not. I was like, I was with my partner and I was yelling at the screen. I'm like, who? Also, Fred Durst is a piece of shit.
Yep. Yeah, and the organizer, the promoter guy who victim blamed. I also wished I could unsee.
Ugh, part
of
it.
Well, I remember him saying, because there were a lot of young women who were wearing very little clothing or no clothing, and he was blaming them. Yeah. And I was like, okay, but he was so defensive. Anything you said about he was still defensive. How many years later now? 22 years later.
And he's like, planning a next concert too.
I like, know. Terrible.
He should plan nothing.
Yeah. Like he should go to wherever the fire festival guy is. Like they all got to get together, go away. not allowed to plan any events ever again. Yeah, like, listen, I'm 15 years old. I'm sure some of those girls there were younger. Which... like, everyone's getting groped. What a nightmare.
Yeah, I went to SARS doc in 2003. Is that what it's called?
It was something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and I, like, when I watched Woodstock 99, I was like, that was only 4 years later, and I had a pretty peaceful experience. I don't know if I was just, like, too far away from where all the stuff was happening, or, but, and there were twice as many people there, but, like, I feel like it could have been a much scarier experience.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the whole thing about, like, Woodstock was just, like, when they were showing, like, the washrooms and all that other stuff, and or the porta potty, I was like, ugh. It was just bad planning from start to finish.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and charging $4 for a bottle of water.
And yes, just also wanting to plan something to replicate a different non-corporate thing is so funny. Hey, it's...
That's very 90s.
Yeah. It's so 90s. Remember when this thing happened? I mean, again, I'm sure there were problems at Woodstock. I don't know. I wasn't there, obviously. But, like, Woodstock 99, they're like, listen... We know people love music festivals now, so let's try and capture this magic from 1969. We don't have Quaaludes anymore, but we could still do this. Okay, I'm coming back to your... I mean, this is a great tangent, and I have no complaints. See, this is why editors are great, and I'm glad you had a great editor. I also love to go on tangents. In comedies, I think they're a little more allowed because people want to laugh, so it's okay if you, like, take a little moment. But if it's serious, and then I think everyone's like, no, you cannot be doing this. Like, this little digression is not cool. So the novel covers so many pivotal moments, and, you know, Nina's life is explored in all these moments throughout her life. So did you write through others that were cut, some times in her life that felt significant, but maybe didn't end up contributing in the way you thought they would? Because it is told in a linear fashion, but we do kind of jump from pivotal moment to pivotal moment. So
I don't think I did. Like, I think the initial draft that I submitted was maybe a couple chapters shorter, so I ended up writing more. And I still feel like there's more I could write, especially because there are time jumps between the chapters. And, like, teaching is so, it's so interesting to me to write about. Like, I feel like there's so many, I feel like I could write a whole other book about teaching. So, yeah, I don't think I did so much cutting as much as adding.
This also makes me feel great because I feel like I am also that type of writer where I'm like, no, this is great. Look at, I got all this stuff here. And then it's like, no, you need more things. Except poetry, where I write too much. Fiction, I never write enough. Poetry, always too much.
Yeah, same. I was always, every time I get edited in a novel, they're like, we need more. And I'm like, why? I just said the thing you want me to say in a whole chapter in 10
words.
Why
are you punishing
must there be
me?
More? I want to talk a little bit more about Amy, and I wanted to know, like, was she a difficult character to write? Because I read her, and what I see in her character, other than who she is I actually feel like I could read your effort. Like, I was like, I can see how she worked very hard on this, but you could please correct me if I'm wrong, or just, you know, like, how was that experience for you?
Yeah, Nina was a tough character, I think, because she isn't based on anyone. And, like, that was one of the things I added in my later drafts, because initially she was a smaller part of the story. So I ended up kind of extending her arc and, like, giving her a bigger place in the narrative. And I think she's complicated because, well, one, she's just a complicated person, but, like, so much of what she's going through happens off screen. Like, the things that are going on in her family, her mother leaving and her drug habit that escalates without Nina even knowing. I think it was hard to write her because like Nina doesn't know what's happening with Amy. So then like, how do I convey that Amy is going through this stuff with like the main character doesn't even know that she's going through it. So I think that was kind of the challenge. Yeah.
And I think like, Amy is not, doesn't always do likable things. Like her just, so she is often, like she often frustrates Nina, for example. Yeah. And then, but at no point did I, have, as a reader, hate her. I still wanted. Yeah, no, I didn't. Because you know what, honestly, I do feel like we've all, I also had very intense friendships with other girls when I was a teenager. And I think we've all had a friend who kind of, is frustrating or, you know, also deals with like addictions. I think that's a really common situation for a lot of people, but like I read her and I'm like, oh wait, I think I know you. How can we save you? I had that feeling a lot.
Yeah. I'm really interested in those, like writing about prickly, intense female friendships, especially in adolescence, because I mean, at least for these characters, it's pre-romantic relationships. And like, I kind of imagine that even if all of the stuff that happens to them didn't happen, that they would still grow apart. And they're already starting to grow apart at the beginning of the book. Exploring that friendship was interesting to me, especially because like later on, Nina's friendship with the other friendship with Jules that she makes later on is much less complicated. And I kind of think it's just because they're grown up.
I think that like when we're younger like that, you're going through so many changes and pushing at your boundaries. And there are many different ways to do that. And like, there was like one scene where Amy's dad tells Nina that he doesn't want her hanging around Amy anymore. Mm-hmm. And that broke my heart. It truly broke my heart. I'm like, what are you doing, dad? It's not Nina.
I know, me too. Yeah, I felt like I was watching a movie and I wanted to scream at the screen.
Oh, because they're kind of lifelines for each other, or they could have been, which to me was the heartbreaking part.
Yeah. Oh. No, it's okay. So on the flip side, there's also this whole family narrative with Nina and her family. And I just think you did such a great job of writing through that, all of the different kind of phases you can have in your relationship to your parents specifically, and how it starts to somehow at one point, even though it's still not easy, but it, like a switch kind of turns on where it's like, oh, this is now not as difficult. And I think maybe that also too, is just you get older or you develop some skills. But maybe, if you could also talk a little bit about writing of that family dynamic.
Yeah, thanks for that question. I feel like that's so thoughtful. Because it does kind of go through this ebb and flow, her relationship with her parents. And I think she's close enough to them that even when they go through conflicts, it's like the conflicts just kind of fade away rather than them having to address them head on. And maybe that's just what it is to have people love you unconditionally. I think for Nina, I think it matters to her to make her parents proud, and that affects a lot of her feelings and the way she interacts with her parents. Like when she quits something, she's first of all worried about her like disappointing her parents. Or when she's like single, she's like, oh, I need to find someone to make my parents happy, and never really comments on her own interest in a romantic relationship.
Yeah. Okay. Should we talk about terrible men and boys? Because not all the men and boys in the book are terrible.
Oh, terrible men. So
but
many.
Like,
most of
there's
them are,
some
yeah.
real bad situations.
There's a couple that are, well, her dad is lovely.
Okay. Oh, yeah, he's great. He's awesome.
Nina's dad is very lovely.
High fives for Nina's dad, for sure.
I love his basement full of dead electronic devices in his basement. Like all dads, honestly. like, I love it. Oh, we might come in handy one day. You know, thank God I have this basement full of stuff when your laptop gets stolen. Anyways, but yeah, let's talk about the terrible men and boys.
Because I think there's such a nuance to them.
For a couple of them.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, for a couple of them, they don't seem terrible until they are terrible. Mm-hmm, and a couple of them seem kind of terrible, but then they end up being not so terrible. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there's like the only other, I'm just trying to think if there's any other like nice guys in the book.
There's the one guy that Nina dates for a while.
Yeah, and then she horribly ghosts him.
Oh, I don't know why. Well, I do know why she ghosted him, but I was like, no!
Yeah, I think at that point in the book, she's just lost her ability to trust.
Well, yeah, let's talk about them, you know, a lot of what. So Dina and I were talking about this novel. We were talking about the arc, and one of the arcs for me is this, like, how Nina's life or life in the novel starts with one terrible man
mm-hmm.
that seems to set the tone for the way she deals with men or reacts to men after that.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. So can we, first of all, how hard is it to write terrible men?
It's not that hard.
Yeah. I mean, I agree.
Like, it's kind of fun, actually.
I think
isn't
that's
it?
The thing that's good about this is there is a level of nuance and change and shift in the relationship with these guys in the book, because they're not just like immediately like red flag.
Yeah, I think like I was thinking of, well, like I guess so. There is this big traumatic thing that happens to her early in the book. I'm trying not to spoil it, involving a man. And I didn't want that to be like the one thing that the book was about. I wanted it to be about like all of these accumulating small gender-specific experiences that she has. So there is that one big one that, as you just said, sets the tone. And then I think there's the one in the second half that is more subtle, where she's in Baltimore and she goes on that date. And it's like, you can almost feel angry at her for being so passive, but she's passive because of what has already happened to her. And it wasn't that hard to write these characters. Honestly, I spend a lot of time on Reddit, and like every day I read like 12.
I gotta be honest, that one scene of the date was like, you did what Cat Person was trying to do. Is this too harsh? Anyway, I don't need to care about Cat Person or not care about Cat Person. It's fine.
Am I the asshole here that I think Shashi's writing is better than Cat?
No, absolutely it is. No, you're not an asshole. First off, if you're an asshole, you're a good asshole. Willing. You're the best kind of asshole. The most precious asshole on earth. That's who you are, Jen.
Ah! It's not Can't Lit unless we're talking about buds.
We haven't talked about buds so far yet, but now we are. And I think
I was just saying on the date that the meal he cooks her also sounds not great.
It does sit for a while, so that might have made it less appetizing.
Part almost was like rom-com territory, where it's just like so awkward, the meal situation. You're just like, oh boy, this is the cringe.
Yeah.
The cringe level.
I think I've had that feeling where it's like, you think you should be enjoying yourself and then you're just not anymore. And it's like, how do I end this situation politely and like get the hell out of here?
But there is always a little bit of level of danger, a little bit of like anxiety, and then also probably the kind of thing where you want to like leave and tell somebody immediately, like, look, this is the shit show I just had to live through. So then writing, also there is a teen boy she becomes a teacher, and there is a teen boy who, that to me almost was the most unsettling, because it was not usually the experience that we encounter in terms of a level of discomfort with male attention or behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it doesn't happen, but I think it's not depicted as often.
Yeah, and I guess because it's a situation where it's a student bullying or harassing a teacher, and like I think part of her conflict there is that she thinks she's, or she is, the authority figure. Like she's supposed to lay down the law, and she asks like a billion different people for advice, and everyone just kind of puts the responsibility back on her. Like I don't feel like there's anything she can really do. And even when the situation is, quote, dealt with, he's still in the classroom with her. Like she still has to finish the semester with this student in her class, which it just feels like a nightmare to me.
So terrifying. I mean, I definitely know that this happens to people, and it's so awful.
Yeah, actually, like, so there's a thing that happens in that chapter where the male student writes a story that's supposed to be fiction, but he puts her in it, and it's just really like gross and uncomfortable. And I just made that up. And then I read the Roxane Gay edited collection, Not That Bad. And I think it was the first essay in that collection had a professor describing something really similar happening to her, where a student wrote a story where I think it was like he was sexually assaulting the professor. Jesus. I was just horrified. I was like, oh, this is nonfiction, and I just like made this up. I think that would be terrifying.
I had a student write a story that I appeared in. It was not sexual assault, but it was like, I appeared as like I didn't speak. I had no dialogue. I was a beautiful Asian lotus blossom on the Skytrain, and he was trying to talk to me, or I can't even remember, but it was like, it was uncomfortable and horrible, but that's fine.
Gross.
I hate it.
It's totally gross. It's weird. It's just weird.
And how do you respond to that? Like, then you have to give it a grade?
Yeah, I said to him, she has no name and no voice, so you've not given her enough as a character. That was pretty much my only feedback, right? And then I said, also, when you're describing Asian women, maybe using the word lotus is stupid.
Like, yeah, well said.
Absolutely.
I don't think I said stupid. I think I said cliched.
Right. You were more articulate.
And then I blogged him on all social media.
Great. Good job.
Yeah, I was nice enough. But then I blocked him on all social media, and I told my boss, and that was that.
Yeah.
It's good, too, that didn't escalate.
Anyway,
like,
terrible.
You never
men.
Know if something.
So easy to write.
If something will escalate. Yeah, for sure. So speaking of our deep emotions, Jen, do you have your emotion corner ready to roll?
Yeah.
Okay. You can start now.
Okay. So I just started a new job, right? As an acquiring editor, and it's really hard. And I want to say learning a new job at my age, at 45, I know I'm not ancient, is hard. My brain is not as spongy or absorbent as it was 20 years ago. And I had to do things like learn how to use a profit and loss calculator, and it really, really messed me up. And this new job is making me think about aging. I'm aging. So everyone has different ways of managing their age or thinking about it. And like, I know people who choose to use like fillers and get like cosmetic surgery and stuff. And that's fine. And then I have other friends who are like counting down the days to their early retirements at 50. And it makes me think that like aging is about, for me anyway, continuing to learn new things, although I would like a slightly slower pace on the learning of new things, but also like trying to streamline like my life to be simpler so I can focus on the things that matter, which are really books, like the dog and I guess the kid. But I will say I'm not saying no to fillers or Botox. That's not what I'm saying, because I don't know when I'm going to feel the need for that, if ever. But for right now, I am okay with the 3 white hairs that are growing right here. And I feel like maybe one day I could look like Cruella de Vil, which is what I'm going for. And because I like red lipstick too. Yeah. So obviously that is my destiny. Anyway, I'm only 45, but I'm already thinking about it.
I mean, this is all very understandable. Yeah. And I do hope you start to look like Cruella de Vil.
It's true. I have a white streak coming like right here.
That's nice. I like it.
Hey, it could be, except I'm not going to skin dogs for coats. Because I
love
like
dogs too much. That's true.
So that seems wrong. But I can look like her.
Absolutely.
I love dogs. I love dogs too much. Okay, Dina, are you ready?
Yeah.
For your rage.
Let's see. Okay, I am ready.
We're gonna go. My phone is always at 1 minute because the only thing I ever use it for is to time Dina's rage minutes. Okay. You can go now.
My cucumbers are too needy, and I am angry at them for being so shitty and at myself for not treating them like the sensitive vegetable toddlers they are. I'm sorry I didn't take care of you well enough. I am so sorry. Please, just a few more little cukes. Wildfire season. It's rude. It's horrible. Destructive. Sure, we hate it. It's gross. But what about governments who say they care about climate change, but do literally nothing about it and are like, oh dear, oh my stars, everything's burnt down. We couldn't do nothing about it. You boots covered in cow shit liars. The phrase, just grateful to have a job. The phrase, solid career advice. The phrase, can you keep it down? And finally, my shower, which is trying to kill me. And I just want to stay clean. I'm just out here trying to be part of the shower discourse, stay clean. I've slipped in it and out of it and hurt myself. And another time I cut my foot, and I just want to have a basic shower with no incidents.
Yeah.
Wow. That was incredible.
So that's what I have to say about that for today.
I mean, you do not want to be like Jake Gyllenhaal. That's all.
The thing is, I used to think he was so cute, and now I'm really questioning my choices.
Well, you know how it is, right? I was reading, like, I don't remember, a lot of people wrote about it already, but it's always like rich white people who don't bathe because they're not in any danger of getting their children apprehended.
You know what else I don't like?
They're not in
I
any,
don't
you know?
Like that they're taking not bathing away from depressed people. It's rude. Let us have this one thing.
I like it. I like having showers. What is the big deal?
I just mean, if let people who are physically unable to, for whatever reason, because they physically or emotionally can't not have showers, you're fine. You've got lots of money. You probably have a super nice shower. Mine's barely clean. Give me a break. Rude.
They probably have showers this whole size of my whole tiny home.
They probably have multiple showers.
Well, what's that like?
Like, what a life. This multiple shower life. So this has been the podcast. Before we let you go, is there anywhere online where people can find you that you would allow them to find you? It could be social media, a website.
Yeah, my website is shushybutt.com, and I'm on Twitter at shushysbutt.
Excellent. Yeah, and of course, we encourage you to purchase the most precious substance on earth. And if there are any events coming up, to attend them, you can find us at cantlit.ca, cantlit on Twitter, wherever you get your podcasts. As I said a couple months ago, I did finally figure out how to get it on Spotify. Huge, huge for me, a person who thought I, for whatever reason, could not figure it out, but I did. It only took Woo-hoo! 7 years. So before, oh, and don't forget, if you do listen, rate, review, give us those 5 stars. Don't go below 5. This is 2 Leos. You don't want to piss off 2 Leos. That's terrible for you and your family. Italian and Chinese Leos. We know people, okay? So don't think.
We are, no, don't even start. We know a lot of people. We know a lot of nonas and a lot of popos. Yeah, you got to watch them.
Do not tolerate that behavior, okay? So we only have one question left. Shashi, what can't you with right now?
I can't with climate change.
It's terrible.
I tried to come up with a more creative answer, but with the heat and smoke, it was all I could think about this week. And I have developed a sun allergy, which I feel like is the first step to becoming a vampire. So,
oh, no, really? Yeah,
climate change.
I mean, maybe becoming a vampire is what we all need to be doing.
Seems like the only way.
Like, I just got excited because the trailer for What We Do in the Shadows season 3 came out yesterday. So it does make me want to be a vampire because that show is so funny and good. But yeah, I mean, no, I not to go back to my own rage minute, but like truly all these fires are happening and the premier of this province is like, we really care about climate change. It's like, you don't at all. You're doing truly nothing right now. This is so stressful to witness. Oh, brother. Anyway, yeah, you're correct. It's brutal. Yeah, listeners, we really care about you and we hope you're doing okay. Pandemic's not over. Climate change is happening in a continuous time loop. But I hope more of your dreams are fulfilled than these nightmares that we have to live with every day. Jen, a pleasure as always.
As always, Dina.
And what an amazing guest. I truly cannot say enough times how great this book is. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And thanks for reading so closely and asking such great questions, too. It's really a gift.
It was truly a pleasure. And I'm very happy that, yeah, I had a real hard time reading this year. And this was one of those books that really kickstarted me into sitting down and reading a full book cover to cover, which was thrilling.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
All right, everybody. We love you. Take care of yourselves. If you like going out in the sun, do. You could join me. You can at me at that beach bitch. Just kidding. That's not my handle. Anyway, everyone have a great day and take care. Bye-bye.